Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm scared, Robbie. Oh, it's Halloween, and it's so tired. It's so incredibly scary with all these stories.
Is that like your best Marge voice?
No, I wasn't really trying for that, but I can work on that.
It wasn't so bad. If that's like your Marge warning voice, it's not terrible.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll work on it some more then. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. We only have like a billion Treehouse of Horrors to go.
Hey, they're only on, what, 25?
Yeah, 26? Exactly.
I don't remember.
They didn't have one in the first season, so there's one less than the amount of seasons.
Right. Right.
Before we get into this week's episode, which is Treehouse of Horror number 2, we want to, first of all, thank you, Izzy. Israel, who I did a shout out last week. He kindly donated to the show, very generous donation. We definitely want to thank Izzy on the show. Very generous. Thank you very much.
Izzy, you're my hero.
And also, excuse the quality of my voice. I am still fighting off an illness. A couple things in the news we want to talk about before we get the episode. Protests in Bolivia about The Simpsons and their time slot. Apparently, there's many fans of The Simpsons in Bolivia, and they're such a fan that they staged protests in public when a television station was going to shorten the amount of time The Simpsons was going to be on the air, and it worked. Apparently, they're reverting back to the old time slot for The Simpsons. So,
wow.
It works. Hey, guys, in Bolivia, at least, if you don't, all you Firefly fans, you take note.
That's true. You can totally get more episodes by protesting in Bolivia.
Yeah, that's all it'll take. The other thing got brought to my attention is it was a BuzzFeed article, but it was originally on Reddit. A fan theory that was brought up on Reddit was that Homer, after in the very first clip show, the first act, the frame kind of for the clip show, he is knocked into a coma by an exploded beer can. The theory is he never came out of the coma. Everything after that episode is taking place in Homer's brain, explaining the crazier and crazier events that have gone on as the series has gone longer, like, you know, in more ridiculous things like going to work for Bond villains and meeting all celebrities and all that kind of stuff. It's all explanation for Homer being stuck in his own brain. I think it's very interesting. I don't think it's true. I think it's a little too neat for it to actually be true.
Not to mention, it's like there for the first, you know, 8-9 seasons, there's not that much of a difference between, you know, what happens before that clip show episode and what happens after. So I don't really see why they would need the ones after would have Homer in a coma. It doesn't seem to be necessary.
Yeah, I mean, Grandpa has talked to a ghost already. Right. It's not, that's pretty out there. I don't think it needs to be in Homer's brain to be weird. I just think, you know, it's a nice theory because it explains the decreasing, I mean, the alleged decreasing quality of the show. But it's nice. I think it's interesting. It's fun. Before we get going, yes, please rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes, your podcatcher of choice. If you like the show, it really helps us out. We really appreciate when you do that. We read every single comment, and it does help us get more listeners, which we do appreciate. This week's episode, Treehouse of Horror number 2, even though the title screen still says Simpsons Halloween Special, right? I didn't imagine that, right, Matt?
No, it definitely does. So they haven't gotten around to...
They call the episode Treehouse of Horror 2, but they have not designed the logo for it, I suppose. It's episode 8F02, originally aired October 31st, 1991, on Halloween. Written by Al Jean, Mike Reese, Jeff Martin, George Meyer, Sam Simon, and John Swartzwater. There are 3 segments, so a lot of writers. Directed by Jim Reardon, its original air date, episode had a 12.1 Nielsen rating, was viewed in approximately 11.14 million homes, finished the week ranked 39th highest rated show on Fox, tied with In Living Color.
That's right. Finally took down Married with Children, but kept up with their buddies In Living Color.
Yeah. So we got a good run so far. The Simpsons keeping it number one, at least tied for number one. This is the first episode that they have the spooky name thing going on with, you know, Morbid Matt Groening and... Spooky Sam Simon or et cetera, that they've done for a long, long time. And then they stopped, and then people complained, so they started doing it again. Marge does come out, give her a little warning. They only do that a few times before they get tired of using it. The framing narrative, again, they're still using the framing narrative, is basically the kids have all gone trick-or-treating, brought back a whole bunch of candy, they eat all the candy, and then they have nightmares because they eat the candy before bed, including Homer. Homer as well. In the framing story, Lisa was dressed up as a totem pole, Bart was a like a executioner, and Marge had the streak in her hair like Bride of Frankenstein. What does Homer have a costume? I can't remember, man.
I don't think so. He was sitting on the couch when they got home, so I don't think he actually went anywhere.
Yeah,
he could be a hobo again. That's his go-to costume.
We basically each act is one of their nightmares. The first nightmare is Lisa's, and her nightmare is that of the story of the monkey's paw, which they are visiting Morocco, not Monaco. Homer's confused. And Homer visits a mysterious vendor.
It is a monkey's paw dating back to Alal bin Abdallah. It has the power to grant wishes to its owner.
Oh, yeah? How much?
Sir, I must strongly advise you to not purchase this. Behind every wish lurks grave misfortune. I myself was once president of Algeria.
Come on, pal. I don't want to hear your life story. Paw me.
You know, I didn't go to school for business, but I'm pretty sure if you didn't want to sell it, it wouldn't be on your cart with a price tag on it.
Oh, all right, Mr. Businessman. they take the paw home. Side note, apparently the writers wanted the last finger to be the middle finger. So the monkey would be flicking you off, but the censors, naysayed it, unfortunately. I think that would be a funny gag. But they don't know what to wish for. Finally, you know, it's passing around the house. Maggie gets a hold of it, cringes up her face for a second, and then suddenly a luxury car pulls up, delivers a new pacifier, which everyone is disappointed in, aside from Maggie. She thinks it's a great wish. Was it Bart's wish is the second wish?
Yes. So the Simpsons be rich and famous.
Rich and famous, which the entire segment is basically just our meta-analysis of the Simpsons merchandising trend and the music. They go to a restaurant, and then it's a little montage of all the Simpsons stuff.
If I hear one more thing about the Simpsons, I swear I'm going to scream.
At first they were cute and funny, but now they're just annoying.
$18 for this? What a ripoff.
Man smart.
The woman is smarter.
Man smart.
The woman is
smarter. Man, this thing's really getting out of hand.
So I forgot that this was this early on in the show. Like, it's still 1991. They're still in, the thrall of the merchandising craze for The Simpsons, and they're already, making fun of it. It's great.
They knew what they wanted to do.
But to be fair, if they did release a Calypso album, I probably would buy it anyway. So I can't critique them too much. The third wish is for world peace, Lisa's wish. And it works. Everyone immediately is happy and peaceful. Everyone, they have a long montage of people throwing guns and bazookas into a big furnace, including we see Moe and Krusty throw several firearms in there.
And brass knuckles.
Kodos and Kang show up and just in time to see them get rid of all their weapons. And they take over the Earth with a club and a slingshot.
Yep.
With all their alien buddies. I don't think we see anyone aside from Kodos and Kang, but now everyone on Earth are slaves.
It happens, you know. That's what happens when world peace comes around. You turn the Pentagon into a mall.
Yes. Was it the Five Corners Mall? I do like that.
Yes.
Homer, frustrated with all this, with these repeated wishes turning to nothing, it's the kind of the classic Twilight Zone twist. Oh, wish for something and then you get the worst. He makes one final wish.
I'll make a wish that can't backfire. I wish for a turkey sandwich on rye bread with lettuce and mustard. And I don't want any zombie turkeys. I don't want to turn into a turkey myself. And I don't want any other weird surprises. You got it? Hey. Mm. Mm. Oh. Mm, not bad. Nice hot mustard. Whisper Bread. Turkey's a little dry. The turkey's a little dry. Oh, foul, accursed thing! What demon from the depths of hell created thee?
I don't want to be a zombie turkey. I don't want zombie. I don't want to be a turkey. It's amazing.
He actually does a really good job of covering all the bases.
I know, really. I think that if I ever did get wishes, I'd be sure to be like, cover every single possible caveat.
I would hire a whole bunch of lawyers to go over.
Yeah, like write up an entire wish contract. But Homer's about to throw out the monkey's paw. And they only have four wishes. It adheres to Simpson's logic and that the monkey also has three fingers and a thumb. But Flanders stops him, and Homer's like, haha, I'll get it over on Flanders and give him, you know, the paw that, you know, ends up screwing you in the end. But all that Flanders has to do to turn that on its head is to unwish the thing that the Simpsons wish for. He wishes for the aliens go away, which includes one of my favorite references in the entire show.
He's got a board with a nail in it!
And save humanity, will ya?
Run, Kodos! Okay, it seems the Earthlings won, did they? That board with the nail in it may have defeated us, but the humans won't stop there. They'll make bigger boards and bigger nails. Soon they will make a board with a nail so big it will destroy them all!
So watch out for the board with a nail in it.
That's true. I mean, I find it hard to believe that no one thought of that until then. It's like, you know what? There's a lot of things that could be really painful that are just hanging around. My garage, I got a bandsaw. That could really hurt if you tried to hit somebody with it.
But she wished for world peace, Matt, and that includes, I think, the mindset of people where it makes them peaceful.
Fair enough.
Peaceful and complacent.
Does Lisa's wish, is it counteracted by Flanders' wish, so now everyone goes back, or is everyone still world peace except for aliens?
I think the world peace, but the aliens are gone. He just wishes the aliens away. So I think just end up going away, and then he gets a giant castle next door to the Simpsons, which I don't know if that's necessarily a Flanders wish. I would think that he'd do something a little bit more selfless, but, you know, it is a Trails of Horror. It's a Halloween episode, so it's fine. It's not canon. Oh yeah, and that's the commercial. We go to commercial. Matt gets my favorite of the stories.
Oh. So when we come back, the first one was, I believe, Lisa's nightmare, and this one is now Bart's nightmare. Lisa bribes Bart with a candy necklace, which Bart immediately consumes, and then invites Lisa to sleep in his bed since she's scared. This is a parody of a Twilight Zone bit called It's a Good Life. And it basically, you have a narrator telling you what's going on with the town, because everyone's walking around looking really nervous.
Harry Shearer doing a Rod Serling impression.
A very good one, because it sounds exactly like the old Twilight Zone narrator. But everyone apparently has to think happy thoughts or terrible things will happen to them, as we see happens to Jasper when he gets turned into a dog for not thinking happy thoughts. And, of course, through the narrator, we learn that there's a terrible monster that's making them do this, and that apparently it's a 10-year-old boy. And are there any 10-year-old boys we know of? Oh, that's right. There's Bart. So,
quite a twist.
Of course, quite a twist, huh? But Bart wakes up one morning, and the family is visibly frayed. They are essentially scared to death and telling Bart that everything he does is wonderful. Bart apparently does not like the cat, so he turns it into some kind of crazy monstrosity with super long legs, and the back half, I believe, is a blue polka dot pattern.
That he doesn't like the cat. He just thinks it's not interesting.
That's right. It's the same old cat. Unfortunately, the cat breathes fire. It sets the curtains on fire, which Marge then has to fix.
Oh, good. The curtains are on fire.
Yeah, everyone is super happy about that. The bus comes to take them to school. And all the other kids are in the back, like in the last four rows. The entire school bus is jammed back there, and everyone's scared to death of Bart, because for very good reason. And Bart tells Otto that he's driving today. And Otto's like, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, wait, because only Otto could forget that Bart is a crazy monster. And he says, all right. So Bart drives him to school with Otto working the pedals, because, of course, Bart is too short. And Otto says, oh, this is great. Yeah, we're going to die. Yeah. But they all make it to school safely, as far as we can tell. We don't see any dead bodies. We do see the school bus over on its side, where we find out there has been a test. And, according to Bart's answers on the test, there's some new history. America was discovered in 1942 by some guy, and it's actually not even called America anymore. It's called Bonerland, because that's how it rolls when you're all-powerful like Bart is.
I love Bonerland.
But it's a great name for a country, really. Then, of course, during this all, Bart is in a big easy chair. He's getting a massage. He's got a drink. Basically, he's royalty because he can do whatever he wants. And what Bart wants to do is to make a prank call.
Bye, Walter. Baby Walter.
Mouse Tavern. Hold on, I'll check. Hey, everybody. I'm a stupid moron with an ugly face and a big butt, and my butt smells, and I like to kiss my own butt.
That's the one.
Wait a minute.
I just love when Mo says, wait a minute, like he's actually just realizing it for some reason.
I like to kiss my own butt.
That's true. That's a great name for a person. I also really enjoyed Skinner singing over the intercom with his harmonica accompaniment.
Of course. Need the harmonica, man. Need it.
Absolutely. Then, of course, after the prank call, we see Bart at home. They're watching Krusty the Clown, who has been on the air for 346 consecutive hours, which I believe is just short of 2 weeks. And poor Krusty is not looking well, because obviously Bart loves Krusty, so Krusty can never go off the air. Luckily, apparently Sideshow Mel has some of his wonderful over-the-counter wake-up drugs to keep Krusty going. So, and then, of course, before this, of course, Homer was watching football, and Bart came in and said he wanted to watch Krusty. But, of course, Homer, being an idiot, says, hey, too bad, I'm watching football. And Bart, using his wonderfully crazy mind powers, turns the ball into Homer. And Homer hits the side of the goalpost, falls to the ground, and, of course, is no good. And the announcers once again acknowledge Bart and say, oh, it's wonderful that Bart did that, because you can't think things against a crazy monster like Bart. Or any 10-year-old, anyway. Of course, we see Bart later still watching Krusty on the air, so we're probably into the 350th consecutive hour by now, because Homer is back. He's got a bandage on his head, obviously, from hitting the goalpost. And of course, he's thinking to himself, oh, can't think about hitting the boy, because then he'll know, because he can read my thoughts. Because Homer doesn't understand how thinking works, apparently.
It's very complicated.
He tries to sneak up behind Bart and hit him with a lead pipe, but it doesn't work. Bart notices him and turns him into a jack-in-the-box, to which Marge comes in screaming, oh, that's it, we're taking you to a doctor, please? And for some reason, Bart decides, yeah, sure, I'll do that. So they go and see Dr. Marvin Monroe.
You like attention, don't you, Bart?
Do I ever?
Well, we all do. The problem is that you don't care whether you get good attention for, say, getting high marks in school, or bad attention for, say, turning your father into a jack-in-the-box. Homer, I see you agree with my theory.
I'm not nodding. It's the air conditioning.
Well, that's too bad, because the attention the boy craves should be coming from you. I want you to spend some quality time with him. Get to know him. Maybe even love him.
Maybe love him. I know he's your child and all, but maybe you could love him.
Well, he's also a monster that, like, turns people into, like, abominations.
Fair enough. I love that joke. I still remember the air conditioning bit to this day. It pops into my head at random times. But once they're done with Dr. Marvin Monroe, R.I.P., of course.
R.I.P.
Homer takes Bart around. They play catch. They go on a roller coaster. And eventually, they do enough stuff that Homer tucks Bart in and says, and Bart tells Homer what a great time he had had. So Homer says, well, if you really love me, you could give me my body back. To which Bart says, sure, why not? And he gives Homer his body back, and they hug, and they say, I love you. At which point, Bart wakes up screaming. That's the scariest thing he can think of.
That's the nightmare part.
Yeah, and that's the end of Bart's nightmare.
Yes. Both the kids join Homer and Marge in bed, because they're both afraid now from their nightmares. And now it is time for Homer's nightmare, which is basically Frankenstein-esque story. It's not the same, but it's very similar. Burns and Smithers are watching their with the video camera monitors. Burns decides to fire someone for, you know, just for fun. And of course, Homer's fired.
Well, yeah, if you got to fire somebody.
Yeah, he is sleeping on the job. So, I mean, it's not necessarily... I mean, if someone is sleeping on the job...
Wake up, Homer.
Smithers and Burns go down into, like, their laboratory. In not quite the Batman-esque journey that we see later on in the series, but, you know, there is a kind of a weaving staircase, and they have to pull, like, a little gargoyle or something that moves
up. Yeah, you don't want people at the power plant just stumbling onto your secret laboratory where you practice brain surgery.
We meet the robot Homer, what will be the robot Homer. It looks exactly like Homer if he was a giant robot. Burns has replaced the flesh, which is weak, with the steel that is strong.
Yeah, because it's Homer's spirit that's willing and body.
Well, I think that becomes the point of the episode, as Homer takes a job as a gravedigger, which apparently Willie is also a gravedigger on the side, being a groundskeeper.
Sure any manual labor job probably involves Willie at some point.
That's true. But Burns and Smithers decide to go grave digging to find a brain to put in their robot. And Homer is lying in an open grave, napping. And they kidnap him. They put him in a bag. They realize he's alive.
Did you hear that, sir?
No, I didn't. Who is it? Frankenstein? The Boogerman?
It's the man in the bag, sir. I think he's alive.
Ooh. Bed corp. Scaring Smithers. Satisfied?
Thank you, sir.
Sorry.
That's bad. Just... bad corpse.
Yeah.
The Booger Man. Burns saying Booger Man just cracks me up so much. They go back. They bring Homer back to the laboratory, and they crack him open. Crack open his head. And Burns has a couple great one-liners.
Damn it, Smithers. This isn't rocket science. It's brain surgery.
He takes out the brain, puts it on top of his head like a coonskin hat.
Hello. Look at me. I'm Davy Crockett.
They finally...
Brain skin cap.
They finally get the brain in the giant robot. Connect electrical apparatuses to it. And it comes alive, and they have the, you know, it's alive kind of moment. But it's still Homer's brain in there, and it's not a good worker. It still does the same thing Homer does, including love donuts.
Sprinkles.
Finally, it is, you know, just kind of sitting there, and Burns is really fed up with it, and he delivers this amazing line.
Clinking, clattering cacophony of collisionous cogs and camshafts. Take that!
Burns kicks it, and it falls over onto him, crushing him.
Well, because he can't run out of the way. He's too slow. He can't move to the side 2 feet.
I was going to say, it reminded me of Prometheus.
That's right, the Prometheus fallacy.
Where, like, yeah, hey, if a giant long thing is falling towards you, go to the sides. But... Burns is at least a little bit more plausible because he's an old, decrepit man. But he's crushed, except for his head. His head is poking out. And it kind of fades away before we actually see what happens with Homer waking up and him going into the bathroom, you know, telling the kids, "And oh, I'm just going to go to the bathroom." But he looks in the mirror, and Burns' head is now, what, stitched to his shoulder.
Stitched.
And now... They actually have a little post-credits gag scene where next week on The Simpsons with Homer and Burns using the same body. It's clever. It's funny. But then they go into the special Halloween version of the theme song. That's the episode. Definitely better than the first Trios of Horror. I'll say that.
Way better. I mean, they're still, I feel like they're still finding their feet in terms of, Halloween episodes, especially in terms of still using the framing stories and those sorts of things. And it's weird because I feel like we always have a lot to talk about with all of the episodes in terms of, you know, the moralizing, how good it is. But Trios of Horror episodes, despite them usually being one of the best episodes in a season, there's not a lot to talk about because there's not a whole lot going on besides it just being really funny.
Yeah, it's a lot of course, it's Trios of Horror. A lot of it is just the visual humor and seeing kind of interesting motifs. you know, seeing them do a Twilight Zone episode, seeing them do kind of a version of Frankenstein, seeing them doing, you know, twists on old, you know, wish parables and stuff like that. And it's really good, really funny. It has lots of my favorite, like, the board with a nail in it thing. I think about that all the time. That's a thing, like, along with I hung it on the wall, a thing I think about all the time.
That's it's true. I still think of whatever I need a makeshift weapon. I'm like, board with a nail in it. That'll work.
Yeah. And the whole Simpsons Calypso thing, Bonerland, like, such good stuff in it. It's really funny. Very solid, very good show. Kind of challenging to rank. I'm not necessarily sure where we're going to put it. We could talk it out, I guess. I don't know if you have an idea, Matt.
I really don't. It's just...
No, it's I don't either. We're going to we're gonna have to figure it out, though, because I'm dedicated to including these Trails of Horrors in with other episodes, because I think it's interesting to have that discussion. Next, remind you guys, keep sending in my favorite episode submissions. Simply simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, title my favorite episode, and include your favorite episode and why. I'm getting a steady trickle in. I'd like to see a few more of them. We're coming in on the meat of season 3. Definitely like to see more. Keep sending them in. There's no wrong answers. No wrong answers. Simply, your favorite is your favorite. Next up, comments from the news group. Not much. I mean, a lot of, you know, normal talk. There was a devoted poster at the time was very upset with their local Fox affiliate. Apparently, they ruined the post-credits gag of Trials of Horror, where, you know, they show Homer and Burns as in the next week's episode, supposedly. And so he's gone completely over to satellite. And this Aww. Is not this, and this is not the satellite that we're familiar with, really. This is back in the day when satellite television was, you know, kind of more of a like a Wild West kind of idea. And they had found there's apparently this Canadian station that would air them the Thursday they were going to premiere, but on and that afternoon at 3:15 with no commercials.
Wow.
And so he was posting a lot about how they all these people who taped them, of course, a lot of these people on the news group were taping these and doing tape trades and stuff like that. So obviously showing with no commercials is the best one to tape. He also makes note that Cheers is on before it and Wings is on after it.
Man, talk about a trifecta of awesome.
You like Wings, Matt?
I did actually like Wings.
Okay, I'll... we're not going to get into on our...
Oh, come on. I was like 8 years old. They talked about planes. Well, I liked that.
Okay, that's fair. That's about it. You guys can check out the news group. It's alt.tv.simpsons. They've been around since almost the beginning of the show, and they're still around today. People still solid, strong posters, still posting recaps and stuff. On Google Groups, you can search it and you'll find it. Next up, our listener question of the week. What is Homer's most heroic moment and why? A lot of good answers. A lot of variety. Really, really like that. First up, we have Izzy, at Izzy Steak Fries, our lovely donor. His answer, in Hurricane Nettie, the Flanders home is destroyed and Homer brings together brings the town together to haphazardly rebuild it, which haphazardly he does rebuild it. He is trying. It's fair. Amanda at Drawn to Insanity, a heroic question, being stuck in that horrible job for Maggie and his kids.
Aww.
That's, yeah, she's not the only one with an answer like that, and that it really is. It's not necessarily, you know, yeah, we'll get to it. Peter, at PD Ben, when he joins Flanders outside the bomb shelter in Bart's Comet, leading to a full cast version of Que Sera Sera. It's nice. John, at Choppa Style 311, it has to be when he involuntarily gave his kidney to save his own father after he was hit by a bus. # Honey Bunch. Elliot, King Size Homer, when he saves the day with obesity, Homer is just as absent-mindedly courageous as he is lazy, saving the day by plugging a nuclear storage hole because he gained a bunch of weight to get out of going to work, combines both of these traits, window success indeed. Chris, let's see, most heroic thing Homer has done, going off track a little here and going with a Simpsons movie. Why? Because I can. And because, as Homer says, I'm risking my life to save people I hate for reasons I don't quite understand. As Doomsday clock ticks down, he stops to apologize to Bart. And as Ned Flanders puts it, he's saying he wants to spend his last minute with you. Take on the motorcycle holding the bomb, driving up the side of the dome and going to throw the bomb through the small hole in the top to save Springfield. Not to mention hearing Marge say, someone throw the goddamn bomb, is hilarious. Yes, that's our first listener question that referenced the movie, and a movie is a perfectly cromulent answer. It's basically just a really long episode anyway. We have Abby. When he gave up his blimp ticket to enter Lisa in the beauty pageant, it may not seem like it's that heroic, but for Homer, that's a huge sacrifice. That's very true. Mm-hmm. For Homer, when all he wants to do is go in that blimp, it means a lot. We have Graham. That time Homer punched Simon Cowell, he became the UK's hero.
So true.
Yeah. Daniel, hanging from a helicopter by his feet while drunk to save Bart and Lisa from a forest fire. Quote, I could do a lot of things if I had some money. Nathan, Homer's phobia, despite Homer's rash judgment and poor thinking that put them in the reindeer pen, he still managed to hold Bart safely over his head while the reindeer charged at him viciously. That's true. But when he had some internal injuries afterwards, internal bleeding, I think was it what it was?
Yes, I believe it was internal bleeding.
Whenever Homer absorbs a lot of punishment for his children, it's always really endearing. And finally, we have Zach. I have to say, Homer's most heroic action is working at the power plant. His job makes him so miserable, but he stays there to provide for his family. As Marge says, you work a job you don't like so I can stay home with the kids. Also, who can ever forget, do it for her. And yes, oh my God, do it for her. That's like, I think my most heartbreaking moment was that. I can't quite remember if that was my answer or not. But Matt, what is your answer?
All right. I honestly didn't think people would notice this, but I have to go with King Size Homer because it harkens back to when Flanders failed, where Homer only saves the day by pure luck. Nothing he really does works. Although, to be fair, in this instance, he really was trying, but he did, you know, save a lot of lives. So I have to go with that one.
Guess what, Matt?
Uh-oh. We don't agree, do we?
That's my answer. That's my answer.
Let me look up a different one real quick.
No. We don't. We don't do that. I think I chose it simply because of his intentions are good. Yes. Yeah. Yes, he still does save the day through dumb luck, like in Homer Defined, but he is desperately trying to save. He definitely is, like, the heroism is there. He's rushing towards what could be calamity. And the sign that he holds says he's trying to hitchhike.
Oh,
was it need ride or everyone dies?
Yeah, pick me up or everyone dies, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. My second answer would be Hungry Hungry Homer when he goes on the hunger strike, because Homer going on a hunger strike, that's a big effort from him. But yes, we have the same answer, Matt, once again. I think that's three times we've had the same answer in this.
Oh God.
It's okay. Good minds think alike. Or
have to be special.
You have to. Okay. Birds of a feather flock together. None of that.
No. Sorry.
Oh, all right. Next week's question. This is from Izzy as a donor. He's gotten to choose our next listener question. Actually, he's chosen a very, very good question. I'm really interested to see you guys' answers. Lisa is usually the voice of reason and kindness. So what would you consider to be her most selfish or sinister moment?
Ooh, that's a good one.
That is a good question. I like it a lot. So, you guys, Lisa's most selfish or sinister moment and why? Good. I'm going to post this on all our social media. Be on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. We're on Twitter at SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us, SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Any of those places, follow us, like us, you know how it works. We got a good, solid discussion every single week about these questions. I really love you guys interacting with each other. And really funny, too. You guys are hilarious. So, Matt, with that out of the way, you know what time it is, right?
Ooh, I believe I do.
You know, it is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically. So we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Now, where does this go, Matt? It's a very funny episode. It's very good. It's better than the first Treehouse of Horror. We've established that.
So that puts it in the top 25, at least.
Top 25, at least. I think, like, is it better than, let's say, Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington?
I think so. I definitely laughed a lot more in this episode than that one.
Okay. How about Blood Feud? Is it better than Blood Feud?
Maybe? Probably.
Probably.
What do you think?
You think it's better? How about this? Is it better than Old Money, which is directly ahead of Blood Feud?
See, the thing is, I've seen all of these Treehouse of Horrors way more than most of the other episodes, so I feel like the specialness is lost on me. Like, I still find it really funny, but on like Old Money is one of those episodes I hadn't seen in a really long time and forgot how good it was. So it's really hard to judge.
Well, that's fine. I think we inherently are handicapping Treehouse of Horror episodes a little bit just because they don't have to have a story that hangs together through three acts. They just have to have a little tiny stories, which are difficult in a different way. I mean, they still have to tell a lot. They have to have a story told in like 8 minutes or so. But I think that because they don't have to adhere to the normal Simpsons rules, we don't necessarily consider them as quote unquote difficult as normal episodes. I personally, I think right behind Blood Feud is the spot for it. I think a new number 14 right ahead of Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington.
I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah. I think I really like Blood Feud on that rewatch, and I think we do inherently handicap Treehouse of Horror a little bit. I still think, yeah, this is very hilarious and a good episode, but because it doesn't have to hang for three acts and tell a coherent story throughout it and have, like, you know, drama and climax and all that, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to weigh it, but I think the discussion is interesting. So, new number 14, Treehouse of Horror, number 2, Lisa's Substitute, still number 1, Homer's Odyssey, still last place, and now number 42. You can find this list at our website, simply thesimpsonsshow.com. You can find pretty much everything there. New episodes are posted there, downloadable streaming, links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed. If you'd like to listen to us that way, you can see this list. I break it down overall and by season, and when we get to enough Treehouse of Horrors, I'll probably break it down even further by that. You can contact us through. You can also donate to the show. We'd really obviously appreciate that. There are some perks if you donate to the show that are listed on the site as well. What's next, Matt? What's our next episode?
I believe our next episode is Lisa's Pony. So for all you pony lovers out there, get ready.
Yeah, that's a heart warmer. It's another, all those Lisa episodes almost always, you know, have that emotional core to them. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. You can check out my comic book podcast. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Matt does not participate in social media, so you will not find him.
No, but I am friends with several seismologists, so once again, the Morse code works, but if you want to send it in S-waves and P-waves, just feel free to do that for all you supervillains out there who want to give us a secret message.
So, any Hank Scorpios out there that have earthquake machines at the ready, there you go. You have a use for them, finally.
Well, there are lots of uses, but this is a new communication use.
I guess that's fair, Matt. With that, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.
Shh.